Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hey there. Welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Trisha Griffith. I'm delighted that you're with me tonight. Kim Sturr is my executive producer. She's basically in charge of everything, so if something goes wrong, you need to blame her, not me. Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you by Canines with a Cause. This is a great nonprofit organization with the mission of helping shelter dogs find homes by training them to work as companion, therapy, and service dogs for veterans in need. Check out their website at canines, that's C-A-N-I-N-E-S, with a cause.com. Now, I'm going to start out the show by saying, opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests, okay? You can't blame anyone but the host and the person saying it. Actually, you can't blame the host if a guest says it. They're the responsibility of the person whose lips move those words out, okay? Now, Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuth.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. In other words, if you get all upset at something, you can't blame Web Sleuth, you can't blame Forums for Justice, you've just got to be upset at the person who said it. That's how it works. Tonight, we welcome back Katie Cool Lady. Katie's going to tell us the latest in the Jodi Arias trial, and we'll be getting with her in just a moment. And later on, Elaine Redwine joins us. She's going to talk about something rather shocking in the disappearance of her son, Dylan, which leads me to this point. When are salacious stories just gossip, and when are they true crime clues? Let's go back in time a bit. In the Daniel Van Dam case, this is where the little girl was taken by her neighbor, raped, and killed, for which this monster is now on death row, thank goodness. In this case, Daniel's parents were swingers. They traded partners. Now, the police did not consider the parents suspects, but yet all of this salacious sexual information was out there, and the parents were ripped apart just for making that choice. Nothing to do with the daughter going missing, but for making that choice. And it just became ridiculous, because the point of discussing the case was trying to find out what happened to Danielle Van Dam, not what the parents did behind closed doors with other consenting adults. It was awful. And the people just trashed the Van Dams for it all over the place. Here they had a little girl missing, later on found dead, and people, of course, hiding behind names that are not their real names, still felt they had the right to tear their private lives apart. Had nothing to do with the case whatsoever. Now, in my opinion, in a situation like the Van Dams, there is no need to tear the parents apart for their choices. If I had my radio show back then, I'm sure I would have brought it up, and then I would have said, okay, yes, that's what they do. We're done talking about it. We're moving on to the facts of the case, not to what the parents do. So, now, in my opinion, the Jodi Arias trial, oh, it's all this sex talk. It's mind-numbing and boring. Do we need to know everything about Travis? No, we absolutely do not, and I don't think a lot of it is true anyway. But because the defense says it was all part of Travis Alexander's controlling Jodi, we have to sit through it all. After each day of testimony, I want to take a shower in bleach and alcohol just to feel clean again. And then we have the Dylan Redwine case. Dylan Redwine went missing last November, and he was on a court-ordered visitation to his father's house in Colorado. Later in the show, Dylan's mom, Elaine, will be on with us. She's going to talk about some things that are very disturbing about Dylan's dad, Mark. Now, I really did wrestle with this one, because if Mark Redwine has nothing to do with the disappearance of Dylan, then all his personal info is all over the net. It's awful. Most of it's all over the net anyway. It's out there. We're just going to talk about it tonight. But if Mark Redwine is not innocent, then the information Elaine talks about tonight will be relevant. That's the difference between salacious gossip and true crime clues. What we're going to talk about tonight is a very possible clue and link to Dylan's disappearance. And because Mark Redwine has been in the public media, he is now considered a public figure. And because this nightmare of a situation and the fact that Mark was the last one to see Dylan alive, we need to discuss the facts of the case, no matter what they are. And one of the biggest facts, Mark Redwine was the last person to see Dylan alive. Now, there is some talk of a postal worker seeing Dylan, but that so far, as far as I know, has not been confirmed. Now, Elaine told me, She did not want to trash her ex-husband. She only wants him to tell her where Dylan is. She's convinced he knows where Dylan is. And Elaine believes the information we are going to discuss tonight is directly related to Dylan's disappearance. Let me repeat what Elaine said. She did not want to trash her ex-husband. We should all follow her example. This leads me to another point. The point of this radio show is to get two sides of the story. Now, sometimes we can't get one side to talk, so we just hear the other side. But we do our best to try and present both sides. Let's talk about Web Sleuths, which, by the way, is not connected to Trisha's True Crime Radio. I am co-owner with my wonderful business partner, Sue, but the radio show is separate. Web Sleuths is separate. On Web Sleuths, the whole point of Web Sleuths is we have to let differing viewpoints be discussed. If somebody wants to go on Web Sleuths and defend Mark Redwine and they do so without violating any of our terms of service, then guess what? It's okay to do. And if you see it and it makes you mad, let it go and move on. That doesn't mean that we are not feel our hearts for Elaine Redwine. That doesn't mean we're sticking up for Mark Redwine. We're just trying to let people discuss the facts of the case. And it seems like people think that we are some sort of horrible entity because we are allowing people to come on and say, I don't think Mark Redwine had anything to do with the disappearance of his son. That's okay to do. We still want to help Elaine. We still want to help find Dylan. But the point of Web Sleuths and most other forums out there should be to discuss both sides. Because we allow both sides does not make us, you know, pick one side over another. So please understand that when we allow people to post things about Mark Redwine that are supportive of him, that's our job. That's what we are set up to do. And we try and do it as best as we can. Okay, here's the deal. There are some cases where one side is so disgusting and so slimy that every time the person accused opens her mouth, you feel like you are watching a slimy garden slug spreading putrid slime all over the airways. There's one side of a story that is so awful, and I'm talking about the Jodi Arias trial, of course. Her side of the story, oh my God, I can't take it anymore. Thank goodness there are decent and wonderful people out there like Travis Alexander's family and our guest right now, Katie Cool Lady, who just got back from taping the Ricky Lake show. She's been in the courtroom with Travis's family, and she's got a lot to tell us tonight. Katie Cool Lady, thank you so much for joining us. You are a victim's advocate. Unfortunately and tragically, your sister was murdered. You've been through this horrible situation of going through the courts and the death penalty, and so you can help other families navigate the court system. You're a victim's advocate. You work tirelessly for people who need your help, and for that, we thank you. Katie Cool Lady, the floor is yours. Tell us what is going on, what's been happening. I don't even know where to begin, so I'm going to let you start.
Hey, Trisha. Nice to see you. Nice to hear you.
Thank you.
So, yeah, I really appreciated all your preliminary comments here because that is really pertinent to this trial. I mean, I'm sure, you know, you've seen as many or more trials as me, and I have never, ever seen the likes of the trashing of a victim as I have in this trial.
Me either.
And that's part of why people are coming out and to support the family and to support, you know, justice in this trial is because they have gone too far. Simply, mm-hmm. They've just gone too far. Anyway, this week has been crazy. And just in all the things that have been going on, kind of trial related, really the theme of my week, Trisha, is Web Sleuths.
Oh, great.
I mean, when I pull out of all these events what has been the theme, it really has been Web Sleuths for me this week, from Ricky Lake to attending the trial one day, but Jeanine Driver was there with me all day. Mm-hmm. On Wednesday, and then I had a really, really amazing experience on Saturday with a bunch of Web Sleuthers and a member of Travis Alexander's family that all goes back to the Web Sleuths community. So also, I don't know where to begin other than chronologically, you know, going on the Ricky Lake.
Let's do that. Let's start from I guess Ricky Lake would be first, right?
Yeah, my week started out there, and you'll probably get a kick out of this. If people are interested, there is a thread on the Travis Alexander forum, which kind of documents a lot of these things. And I'm a real nerd with my iPhone, so I take a lot of pictures. So there's a lot of pictures along the way. And I made a little sign that said, "Hello, Web Sleuth from Katie." And I took it with me every step of the way until I lost it. But I got just so nervous and it got me. But anyway, I had it. I got off the plane, you know, one of those where the person's waiting with the sign with your name on it, you know, and, you know, I don't have experiences like this normally. So, you know, I took pictures of everything. And then in the limo, I put out my Web Sleuth side, took a picture of that. Like, I just enjoy bringing people into an experience with me.
That is wonderful.
Yeah, and that's wonderful part of being involved in a community is that, I guess it's just a way I feel less alone in my life is doing things like that and feeling that sense of connectedness, which is what you provide with that incredible community of Web Sleuths that just this week has been blowing my mind.
Oh, thank you.
Really, truly. So anyway, the Ricky Lake Show was awesome. It was like first class all the way. I was put up in a 5-star hotel, taken in a limousine, you know, the whole hair and makeup thing. You know, all of that, and having to tell my sister's story, which was harder than I thought, honestly.
It doesn't get any easier, does it? I mean, it's so tragic, and I'm sure it your heart just must ache every day.
You know, for me, the hardest part was digging through those photographs to find pictures of her that they needed for the show and just reliving all those memories. And providing those, you know, I said all along, it's easier to talk about the crime than it is to talk about my loss.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I guess I can sort of separate them in my head. And so anyway, in that respect, they wanted me to talk about that. And so they did a lot of prepping with me about that. And so they were even cheerful. But Ricky Lake was awesome because she sat down. She instantly made me feel comfortable. She sat down next to me. She remarked about my pedicure. And she showed me her nails. She said, "Oh, I'm so bad. Look at my nails. Her nails weren't done." And so she was just like all girlfriend, you know.
Uh-huh.
And she goes, she knew so much about our case. And she said, "God, you're a real badass, aren't you?" So I put that under my website's name, Verified Badass.
Oh, I saw that. I was wondering what that was. I thought, Verified Badass? What? I love it.
I think we get away with that or not, but she called me that.
Yeah, I think that's great. That's a compliment. That is definitely a compliment.
So two Web Sleuthers showed up in the audience, Tricia.
Oh, they did? Oh, that's great. Are you allowed to say which ones, or do they not want their names, their usernames known?
They can because I asked for permission and it's on the board. One of them just on her own, who I honestly, she doesn't post very much, so I wasn't really familiar with her name. And she goes by Labradorable. And she just wrote me a private message and said, "I got a ticket. I'm coming with my girlfriend. We're coming to the show."
Oh, how nice.
I had no idea what she looked like. For a lot of, you know, all kinds of race. I didn't know what race she was. I didn't even know who to look for in the audience, you know, anything. And then a poster by the name of Frigga I had met because she drove out here from California and attended the Arias trial for a day.
Mm-hmm.
So, or 2 days maybe. And I met her in person, great person. And so she showed up. So, you know, I had my Web Sleuth coalition there, you know. And I know. So that really helped me connect because I was really nervous, really nervous. You know, it's not my thing in the front of an audience. So,
but you've done a lot of media before, though, right?
Not a ton. I mean, it was so many years ago, and like that stupid hard copy show that was on back then. Well, they came and filmed in my home, so that's different than being on stage in front of an audience. You know,
right.
That's not my comfort zone by any means. So I looked out in the audience. I saw Frigga out there, and she was close. And I'm scanning, like, this chick's going to let me know who she is. And she's in the back just waving her little hand. It was cute and plugged in. And so, you know, then I had my segments. I didn't say everything I wanted to say, but I, you know, just followed her lead. You know, so we'll see, and I'll let you know when it's going to be aired.
Yeah, definitely. We definitely want to hear it and see it.
Yeah. The one thing I wanted to say, and I think I might have said this another time on your show, but I really wanted to say this comment that what people need to know is that murder is not contagious.
Mm-hmm.
And when somebody is murdered in somebody's family, people tend to scatter. And that happened to me. I worked in mental health at the time, and you would think that my coworkers would have come in close. I was very isolated.
Oh my gosh.
It's people, and I think it's out of awkwardness. It's scary. People don't want to say. And people will say, I don't want to bring it up. It's like, are you kidding me? Do you think this is not in my head every waking moment? Bring
right.
it up.
Yeah.
You know, bring it up. Don't be afraid to bring it up because the person is thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, maybe not in every single setting, but, you know, people need to know to err on the side of less caution, you know, pushing in and expression. How are you doing with it? Use the words, you know, things like that, that, you know, that people are afraid of saying murder or things like that, you know, and the case. And I don't know. That was one thing I didn't get to say, but I...
Okay, and I think that's a very important point because a lot of our, the Web Sleuths members and people listening to this radio show do come in contact with victims. So basically, it's okay to say, how are you doing? What's going on? What's happening with the case? That's, you shouldn't feel uncomfortable. You shouldn't avoid it, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and it, you know, I guess it does help. It's like, oh, you know, talk about other things to get people's mind off of it. But not at the exclusion of just going right into the heart of the matter. You know, your daughter was killed. You must be devastated.
Right.
That is going to be a relief to most people, I think. People I've talked to certainly would be, for me, a relief. And people tell you. I think people, I would have told people, like, you know what? I don't want to talk about it right now.
Mm-hmm.
But at least you know that's a person you can talk to about it if
right.
you need to.
And
you're dealing with it all the time. So you need to know that there's people who you can get into the nitty-gritty of it with, because you have, it's in your head all the time. So anyway, I didn't get to say that, but I wanted to, so thanks for letting me say it.
You're very welcome. Now, how is Travis's family doing? What happened this week? It was a short week in the courtroom. We're talking with Katie Cool Lady. She is a victim's advocate, and she has been with Travis Alexander's family many days in the courtroom while Jody Arias was on the witness stand giving that horrid testimony. Jody Arias accused of first-degree murder in the death of her, what she claimed was her boyfriend, Travis Alexander. Tell us how the family's doing, what you saw, the little information you can give us that nobody else has.
Yeah, well, I actually spent some time with one of the family members on Saturday, and I think they're doing a lot better than maybe people might think they are. When you see them on TV, of course, they look very pained. They have to look, as we talked about last time, so blank.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, I've seen them outside of court, and they're still able to smile and talk about Travis in bond ways. And they're not completely, totally locked down into this case. You know, obviously, it's their huge focus. If there's one thing I can say about the family, they need help right now financially. And there are places for people to donate on the PayPal because they have been weeks and months away from their jobs, away from their income. One of them is just about ready to lose her vacation time, and they're trying to get people to donate. And, I mean, they have to be in that courtroom, and they're really trying to make it. And they never asked me or, you know, for a thing, but I stepped in and said, how are you guys doing with that? And it was like, they could use it. So if anybody has anything extra, there's places to donate, and they really, really could use it right now.
That is good to know. Because a lot of people, you know, Katie, what I have found out, and I'm sure a lot of people on Web Sleuths and Forums for Justice will attest to, there's nothing you can do, and you want to do something. And even if it's donate $5, at least you feel like you've done something. And so I would encourage everybody, even if it's a dollar, you know, if everybody that came on Web Sleuths one day gave a dollar, Travis Alexander's family wouldn't have to ever worry about being in court again and losing any of their money from the jobs. They would get a lot of money. So, you know, just any little bit helps. Don't be afraid if it's only a buck, because a buck can help, especially when everybody donates a dollar. But you're right. You know, it's just something you wouldn't think of, and I'm glad you asked them. I'm glad they felt comfortable enough to tell you that they needed help. That's good.
Yeah. So, I don't want to tell this whole story because it's all outlined, and I wrote it last night as sort of like a Saturday night storytelling thing on a thread on Web Sleuths that ended up being really cool because I have pictures to go with it and everything. But
just give us a recap.
So you know about the Web Sleuths poster who anonymously sent me this box of gifts.
Why don't you just briefly explain that to the listeners?
Okay. well, I know that she contacted you for your permission, and she had contacted me, and she wanted to get some things to the family, some things to the legal team, the victim advocate, to me. And so we decided the best thing to do was send it to me, and then I would take it to court. So she put a lot of thought into, like, how to send things that would be easy to take to court, all this kind of stuff. So The box arrived on Saturday. Well, 2 days before, I was invited to go out with a family member of Travis's who kind of wanted to go on a little field trip, for lack of a better word, and she had a sense of that she wanted to look for something in the desert, and she wanted to look for one of the weapons. She had an intuition about it. She wanted to just go looking, so we said, we're with you. So a group of us had planned that for Saturday to go out with her. She also had never been to Travis's house. She'd never seen it, outside or inside. So all of a sudden I realized the morning that I'm going to meet her, this package is on my doorstep. So I'm like, oh my gosh, perfect timing. I'll be able to take it to her. So I end up opening this package, and I just can't even describe how beautiful this package was wrapped and beautifully everything. And so when I end up going out and taking it to her, I had seen some of the stuff in the package that was for me, taking it out. In a nutshell, there is a symbology in this package about elephants. That this woman bought these bags that have symbols of elephants on them, and in her note said, you know, the blue is for Travis, the elephant is for that we will never forget. And it's just thoughtful, symbolic, beautiful. All these beautiful ties for the men. It was just incredible. I take it and give it to this family member of Travis, whose jaw drops. She's like, what? She looks at her husband, and he goes, what? And she pulls off her belt loop a tiny little elephant with Travis's
no.
And she goes on to regale us with stories about how the images of elephants have been visiting her ever since Travis died.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. So that gives me chills.
It was unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable. And I said, well, honey, you got a whole box of elephants right there from this anonymous person. And this person sent it in the name of all the Web Sleuth members.
I know she did.
She said, do not mention me. So that happened. There was way more that happened. Of course, we didn't find a weapon, but she had an interaction with the new people living in the house. That was incredible. That's all detailed in the story. And there's pictures and all that, you know, and it, for all of us, it was just, you know, one of those mind-blowing days. Then I ended up calling her, the person who sent this package. And I come to find out, because I don't know anything about her. I never talked to her on the phone. She gave me her phone number. And I find out she is basically an invalid, and she barely leaves her bed, much less her house, and she got the energy to get out of her house and go to a store. And she walked in that store, and she said, normally, I could just see it, she was describing to me, she goes, normally I go to the right, that's where the jewelry is, and I thought I'd get earrings, but something pulled me all the way to the back of that store, and I saw those elephants. She bought every last one of those cosmetic bags at that Vera Bradley. She put some money into this gift, let me tell you, they're expensive. And she bought every last one of those elephant bags from that store and put them, wrapped them in tissue, put a card with each one, put it in this box. I mean, she and I knew, my brother's in the hospital right now, and I was going to visit him, and I couldn't even get in the door of the hospital because I was so engaged with this woman on the phone. We felt like we were part of something really, really big.
Yeah.
That she had sent that to me, that I had thought to carry it that day, that the very person I brought it to is the one that has this elephant theme in her life related to Travis. I mean, this thing was really, really remarkable. And so then last night I said, okay, guys, I'm home. I'm going to tell you this story. And people were just right there with me, you know?
Oh, I'm sure.
And then, you know, tears, and people were writing, I'm having tears, I'm having chills. Because I said, this is everybody. This is all of us. This was done in your name, so you're a part of this entire story. And this woman is continuing to hold her anonymity.
I know, and I wish she would come forward just because everybody wants to thank her, but I understand it. She is an amazing woman. I don't know her. I've only had that one contact with her, and she was so gracious and so humble. It just... It brought me to tears. So we do have some incredibly cool people on Web Sleuths, I do have to say. We really do. And I'm so glad that it worked out for the family, too. That is really an amazing story.
Yeah,
you know,
so
who would have thought?
Also, back to supporting the family, then she said, and let me tell you, I mean, not for nothing, but she spent like over $21 just in postage to mail that package, just
to make sure
it's up there like overnight or whatever.
Yeah.
So she put some, this is a person who is essentially an invalid, and she did all this effort, money, energy. And so she said in that conversation, I don't want any reimbursement. I don't want acknowledgement for this, but people feel inspired to participate, donate to the family.
Oh, perfect. That's a great thing to do. Absolutely.
So those donations have been coming in today.
Oh, that's great. We do kind of have to move on a little bit, Katie. There are some people that want to talk to you, and I do have a couple of questions for you, if I could, real briefly, okay?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. First of all, somebody would like to know, did you see the video of Jody doing handstands at the police station? Did you see that?
I did.
What was the reaction of the family?
I haven't been back in court since that, so
okay.
I don't know. And it didn't come up over the weekend, so
well, it's just
I don't
so
know.
Weird. It's just the
more
weirdest thing ever.
Yeah, just more. I personally just thought she knows the camera is on her. She's enjoying it. She's performing. That was my impression.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And we have Adelaide. Adelaide would like to talk to you. And let's see, there she is. Let me get her on the line here. Adelaide, are you there, my dear?
Hi there. Just wanted to say that we've had so many folks with the Casey Anthony case from the past. When I just joined, as far as Joy Path and AZ Lawyer and News Junkie, and I never, never, never imagined the bonding that this case would bring with Mormon attorney Minor Fourth, PASA, Katie, ANJ again. I was in tears bawling last night, Katie, and I just want to thank you so much for sharing and everybody on the threads. It's just amazing. I can't imagine how much you do for everybody. I just can't believe it.
She really does do a lot, and I know she doesn't like to toot her own horn, but Katie Kool-Lady, you really do a lot, and you've done a lot for the members of Web Sleuth. So I think Adelaide is speaking for all of us and saying thank you, and we appreciate what you do.
Well, last
Absolutely.
Night was really, really special for all of us. I mean, it was like sitting around with a bunch of really, really cool friends and just telling stories around candlelight and everybody passing a Kleenex. I mean, it was that way for me, and it was a really special bonding. It was.
Good. Adelaide, we are running a little short on time. Is that everything, my dear?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay? Hello? Adelaide?
Yes.
I'm going to put you back on hold, okay? There we go. Okay, and now we have, Radar Love wants to talk to Katie Kool-Lady. And let's get Radar on here. Radar, are you there, my darling?
Hello, can you hear me?
We can. What's up?
Okay, hi. I was just wondering, you know, I have a friend that was murdered, stabbed, burned, and buried. And it's the last thing I want to think about every day. How do you press on and continue to be an advocate? I mean, when I do my best never to think about it on a daily basis.
Katie?
Oh, I kind of missed the first part of that question, but
she's unfortunately is on part of that horrible club that nobody wants to be a part of. She's had somebody that she loves murdered, and it's difficult for her, and don't mean to put words in your mouth, Radar Love, but it's difficult for you to carry on and to think about it and to talk about it, and how do you become a victim's advocate when it's just hard to move forward? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, when it's so close to your heart, how do you press on and you keep up with, everything that's going on and follow the crimes that are committed? How do you do it on a day-to-day basis, thinking about it every day when it's so close to you?
Yeah, well, for me, I mean, I haven't been involved in a trial for many years until this one. This one pulled me in. So it's not like something that is like constant in my life following trials. And I really typically just get involved with ones that do for whatever reason. Maybe I don't even know why. pull at my heartstrings more, you know, than other ones, because I think if I just was immersed in it day after day, it would get to me. You know, Radar, look, first of all, I want to apologize to you because I kind of went off the rails the other night. I know what you know what I'm talking about. I quoted you. I had nothing to do with you. And I wrote that crazy, like, letter to Kirk Nurmi. I had just come back from the hospital with my brother, and I was, like, you know, just stream of consciousness. So, anyway, that was kind of funny.
No, I didn't take anything from it.
Yeah. So this is the best advice. And it has to do with last night and what happened last night is, for me personally, I look for signs of life in my life. I look for signs of magic and serendipity and things that are signs from above that are weaving people together and things that are showing me that there's another element or another level beyond the scene that's happening, that is operating, that is good. And I immerse myself in that more than I immerse myself in murder and in these trials. And that is what keeps my head above water.
Radar Love, thank you so much. I do have to go because we are running a little bit short on time. We have one more caller, and I believe it's Tina. Thank you, my dear. Thank you so much. Tina, let's get you on the air here. Tina, are you there, my darling?
I am. Thank you
okay.
so much, both of
You're
you,
welcome.
For everything. Yes,
You're welcome.
And I'm heartbroken about In Session. I love Beth Karras. She is the jewel in HLN's crown and whatever. Okay, I know we're short on time.
That's
but I
okay.
wanted to say that I haven't heard anyone talk about the fact that I believe Jody testified that they had sex twice on the day that she killed him. And she's testified at least twice that that was a quote-unquote de-stressor for Travis. So I'm wondering why he would have been so quick to anger with her dropping the camera had they just had sex twice within a 24-hour period, if according to her testimony it's something that relaxes him and, you know, helps him de-stress. Have you heard anyone talk about that or bring that up, or do you have any thoughts about that?
Katie, have you heard that?
I think that's a really good point. I haven't heard that specifically, that one, but I sure wish Juan Martinez had asked her about that. That, yeah, how he could go from that relaxation endorphin rush from sex right into a, you know, homicidal rage. Yeah, I think, you know, this is another reason why web sleuths and places like that are so valuable, because a lot of different minds come up with a lot of different little details like that. So,
and let me just tell you, Katie, cool lady, and Tina, I know how it happened. She's lying. It didn't happen. That's how it happened.
I agree.
You know, I mean, that's why he was upset. That's why he got, you know, it's because nothing like that ever happened. Oh, she's so beyond annoying. You're getting me started, people. I can't get started because when I get started, I eat my own weight in fajitas and then it gets really ugly. Okay, Katie Kool-Aid,
thank you so much.
Thank you. You're going to be on with us next week, right?
I am, and I want to give one quick plug before I go.
Absolutely.
I started a Facebook page to help Beth Karras get discovered again.
Yeah.
Not after this trial. Go search on Facebook. It's called Beth Karras, Bring Back Beth. And
I love
we
it.
Got 200 people in a matter of 2 hours on there liking it. People are talking. There's pictures. And it's all about two things, bringing Beth back and bringing back our live trial.
Absolutely. Amen, Katie Cool Lady. We'll get that up on Web Sleuths as well. Thank you so much again for all
Thanks
that
for
you
having-
do and for joining us tonight and for coming back on the show. I love you for it. Thank you, my dear. You take care, okay?
Sweet. Okay. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Okay. Wow, she has got so much energy. Katie Kool-Aidy is one of the most amazing women I have ever had the privilege to know. It is absolutely, truly an incredible story, the story of her life and how she has taken something so horrible and tragic like the murder of her sister and turned it into something as positive as it can be. We're going to change topics now. We're going to talk about a young man. He's missing. Dylan Redwine. Dylan Redwine has captured our hearts because he's our kid. If you have boys, you know exactly what Dylan Redwine is like and what he does and how wonderful he is and how much joy he brings to his mom's life. Dylan Redwine is missing. Dylan went missing after a court-ordered stay with his father during Thanksgiving week, court-ordered visitation, and he just vanished. We have with us tonight Elaine Redwine. Elaine, thank you so very much for joining us, and I want to tell you on behalf of myself, and I know of all the members of Web Sleuths and Forums for Justice and the people listening to the radio show, how sorry we are that you are going through this. We're praying for Dylan's safe return, and we're here to help any way we can. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Elaine, let's talk about Dylan for a bit. How old is Dylan?
Dylan turned 14 this past February.
Okay.
February 6th.
Tell us about Dylan. What does he like? What does he do? I mean, he's a typical teenage boy, I'm sure, but give us an insight of how Dylan is and what type of kid he is.
He's respectful, selfless, just very caring, great sense of humor, can make anybody laugh. He loves to hang out with his friends and he loved to go roller skating and very active as far as avid baseball player and just a wonderful, wonderful person. In entering his teenage years and, like I said, just turned 14 this past February. Unfortunately, we didn't get to celebrate his birthday with him. But he's, just a very caring, loving boy.
He is darling. And like I said, it's any of us who have sons can relate to a kid Dylan's age and how they are and just how boys are in general. He does look like, in everything I've heard about him, he is an amazing child. Let's talk a little bit of background, if we might. What is the custody issue with Mark Redwine, your ex, and Dylan's father, and you? You had a custody battle. Give us just kind of a little bit of an overview of that and how it turned out, and maybe we can kind of roll our way into the day that Dylan disappeared.
We really didn't have a custody battle when we initially got divorced. I believe it was in 2008, we had joint custody, but Mark was an over-the-road truck driver or worked over the road, so he was not home. So he didn't exercise consistent visitation. And this past July of 2012, I moved to the Colorado Springs area, and I wanted to put Dylan in school in the Colorado Springs area. So I had to go back to court to get that permanently addressed. And when we went back to court late September, is when I was given, they don't really call it full custody like they used to, but, I was awarded primary parenting.
And did that upset Dylan's dad, Mark?
Yes, I mean, it did upset him. He was very upset that I pulled Dylan out of Bayfield schools and put him in Colorado Springs schools. He was, he wanted the judge to grant him full custody to Dylan, even though he hadn't consistently been with Dylan for years prior to us moving. So he was not very keen on the fact that the judge had actually granted me the ability to keep Dylan here and keep him in school here in Colorado Springs.
When you say he wasn't very keen on it, did you worry when Dylan went to the court-ordered visitation? Were you concerned about anything?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, Dylan had went with his dad before and there was never issues, He had always come home and there was never an issue of him being late or anything like that. So, Dylan didn't throw me any red flags or, didn't say he didn't trust his dad or anything like that. So I had no reason to believe at that time that, anything this horrible would happen to Dylan.
And we're talking with Elaine Redwine, her son Dylan has been missing since November of 2012. He was last seen on a visitation, court order visitation with his father the week of Thanksgiving. Elaine, I know this is very difficult, and I want you to know I'm in the chat room that we have here on the radio show, and everybody is sending you hugs and love and prayers. You have a huge circle of people all over the world that just want to hold you and help you in any way we can. And I know this is very difficult. If you need to take a break, let me know. If you just can't do it, I understand. Is it okay if we continue?
Yes.
Okay.
And thank you to everybody who, you know, sends their prayers and thoughts and hugs.
They do. They really do. Okay. Does Dylan like his father? Now, your other son, let me preface this. Your other son was with you on the Dr. Phil show, and I apologize, I cannot remember his name.
Corey.
That's right, Corey. He has so much hatred for Mark Redwine. You could feel it when you watched him. Just coming out of him, it was a hot fire of hatred for his father. Did he have that type of feeling before Dylan went missing?
Nothing like this.
Okay.
You know, they had had their issues in the past, but, you know, Corey, really, since Dylan went missing, any type of relationship that they had is now non-existent because
of this.
Know, yes.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about what you think happened to Dylan. Let me back up. Was Mark Redwine ever violent to Dylan or Corey in the past?
You know, he wasn't violent in that he, you know, was necessarily physically violent. I think that he screamed a lot. And I do think that he was kind of old school in the discipline area,
mm-hmm.
So that he would spank, and I wasn't, I don't believe in that type of discipline. So it was always a point of contention with he and I. But, you know, he never just struck Dylan, you know, in an inappropriate way. Well, he never struck Dylan to the point that I would be concerned to send Dylan mm-hmm. away with him.
So really, when it comes down to it, the court-ordered visitation, you weren't concerned other than the fact that, is it my understanding that Dylan really didn't want to go? He kind of just wanted to stay home and be with his friends, right? Or am I wrong?
He was very excited about seeing his friends. He had a really great group of friends down there.
Oh, so he was excited about going to his dad's, but to see his friends, right?
Right.
Okay.
He was really excited to see his friends.
Got it. So you had no reason to be concerned at all about this?
Not at the time. You know, in retrospect, obviously, I feel differently, but no, not at the time.
And let's get to that right now, Elaine. You do feel that Mark Redwine knows where Dylan is, correct?
I feel that Mark knows a lot more than he's leading on. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know. Obviously, none of us do, or else Dylan wouldn't be missing. But, you know, I don't know the extent, but I do know that the story that he's giving about Dylan just vanishing doesn't make sense. I know Mark was the last one to see him. I know that Dylan's phone stopped. You know, there was no activity on Dylan's phone.
After when?
After like 9:37 on Sunday night.
And he uses his phone a lot, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Especially when he was making arrangements to see his friend.
Mm-hmm.
So it just doesn't make sense.
So you do feel that he is not being upfront and honest. Let's talk a little bit about the Dr. Phil show. Were you surprised that there were two attempts at a polygraph to give Mark Redwine a polygraph, and both of them he failed to take Dr. Phil up on his offer? Did that surprise you?
It didn't surprise me that he failed to take Dr. Phil up on his offer, no. I mean,
why? Why?
Well, because, you know, he, after the first polygraph came back, the law enforcement told me it came back inconclusive, and then, of course, Mark said on the Dr. Phil show that he failed it. But they had asked him after that to take another one. And, you know, I know that he's got something to hide, which is why he's not taking these polygraph tests, which is why he's not getting out in the media, which is why he's not speaking with me.
Why do you think he went on Dr. Phil? That's what puzzles me. If he has something to hide, and we're not, you know, I just want to say here, you were very clear when we spoke off air, Elaine, you do not want to trash your ex-husband. That's not what we're doing. We're just trying to find out what happened to Dylan. Why do you think he would go on Dr. Phil of all people? Dr. Phil doesn't put up with any crap. Of all people, why would he go on Dr. Phil if he's trying to hide something? Just because he would look so bad if he didn't, maybe?
Well, and I think there was a lot of pressure from, you know, his my stepson and his oldest son, Brandon, and mm-hmm. I think there was a lot of pressure from Corey and I and, you know, from the community as a whole. You know, as Dr. Phil always says, those who have nothing to hide, hide nothing. So it was, you know, it was a very important part of it so that, you know, if he didn't have anything to hide, he could go on Dr. Phil and clear his name.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that happened.
It did not happen. What it did is it convinced a lot of people otherwise. I can tell you that. So you're at the Dr. Phil show. You mentioned that he's not communicating with you. How did he tell you that Dylan was missing? Called you up and said, oh, my God, get out here. Dylan's missing. We need to get together and do this. What happened?
No, he texted me and asked
that
me if
so
I
heard
from Dylan. And
nice.
I said, no, it's really disconcerting, but I'm 6 hours away and you're asking me that question. Not once has he called me. And, you know, he's blocked me and Corey from receiving texts or phone calls from us. So, you know, he's just really just shut us off completely. He will not speak with me. After repeated attempts that I've made, I've begged him, you know, let's get together. Let's talk about this. Let's find Dylan. And mm-hmm. he's just not complying.
Is there any way that somebody could say that your divorce was so contentious that this is why he's blocking you, that it doesn't have anything to do with Dylan being missing, it's just the divorce?
You know, our divorce was contentious because of assets. It wasn't never contentious because of custody disputes or because of visitation disputes. You know, I never tried to take Dylan and Corey away from Mark, irrespective of what he says. There was no alienation. You know, when he was in town, I always made sure that the boys got to see him. But that was so infrequent that, you know, it was maybe 3 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
So he just didn't make it a priority. Our divorce was contentious because of the asset, the distribution of the assets. That's
mm-hmm.
what made it contentious, nothing else.
Okay, so that's not something that he'll be able to say. That is so strange, Elaine, that Mark has blocked you from calling him and his son. From calling him, as you know, I go back to Mark Class, and I don't know if you know who Mark Class is, Elaine. Do you know about Mark and his daughter Polly?
Yes, I do.
He's a good friend of the show's and a good friend of Web Sleuth. And Polly was missing. He and his ex-wife, I don't think, had any great friendship, but they came together. They talked. They did press conferences. They did everything together to
mm-hmm.
try and find Polly. And so for him not to do that is so horrifically wrong. That it only leads to people assuming he is not being truthful. Now, there was something on the Dr. Phil show, and this is a very delicate subject, and I struggled whether I should do this or not, but I think it's important because it very well could be a big clue in this case. On the Dr. Phil show that was edited out, there were some pictures of Mark that, can you tell us who found them and what they were, if you don't mind, or I can say it, and give us a little bit of background about that.
Well, when Dylan and Corey and Mark were on their vacation probably 2 years ago, Dylan was loading pictures from their trip while they were still on their trip, and Dylan had found some pretty disturbing pictures of Mark. And quite honestly, it's you know, pretty tough for me to talk about because I never brought those pictures up because, again, I'm not trying to slander Mark. I'm just trying to find Dylan. But, you know, they were pictures of him dressed in women's clothing and wearing a diaper and you know.
Eating his feces.
Yes.
And now Dylan discovered these 2 years ago, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It was 2 years ago, yes.
And did Corey see them as well?
Yes.
How did they react? What did they do?
I think at first they were just,
stunned.
You know, please, yes. I mean, mm-hmm. I it was very difficult. And I think that over time, after they saw the pictures, you know, there is a very noticeable change in Mark, and there has been for the last couple of years. I think he's very detached, and I just think there have been so many changes. And I think the boys have seen it too.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, I don't think much surprises Corey. And, you know, I think Dylan just kind of rolled with it and tried to make the best of it.
How could they see their father? Did they bring it up to Mark when these pictures were found? Did they say, what the hell is this? Or did they just try and ignore it?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I'm not mm-hmm. sure if Dylan, I know Dylan afterwards did bring it up to Mark, and it was just recently. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
Let's back up because this is important. Dylan just recently brought up to Mark about the pictures he discovered. Do you know when that was?
I think it was when Dylan was visiting over Labor Day weekend in 2012.
Okay.
Before we had court, because we had court on the 21st of September.
And what makes you think that he brought that up?
Just because of him talking to Corey. Dylan didn't really talk to me about that,
mm-hmm.
but he did talk to Corey about that. You know, Corey was his sounding board, if you will.
Right. Thank God they have each other. They can talk about this, too. So now we know that Dylan, let's kind of review this for a moment. We're talking with Elaine Redwine, whose son Dylan has been missing since November 2012. The boy's father was the last one to see him. He was at a court-ordered visitation. And Mark Redwine has refused all communication attempts with Elaine and his son Corey, basically refused to do much to help find Dylan at all, won't talk to them, won't tell them anything. And we have discovered that Corey and Dylan both saw some very disturbing pictures of Mark about 2 years ago. I'm only going to say this one more time because there's no need to go over it, dressed in a diaper, eating his own feces and such. And now we find out that he went to Corey at his last visitation, which was Labor Day, and said that he had talked to his father about these pictures. Now let's fast forward to November 2012 on his next court-ordered visitation. Why do you think, Elaine, that those pictures may have something to do with Dylan's disappearance?
I think it's a culmination of everything. I think that, you know, the pictures are just proof at you know, Mark's change in behavior over the last couple of years. I think there's far more to it than just that. But I really think that, you know, his behavior, his personality has just...
How has it changed? Can you give us some examples?
It's just, he was never a very attentive father, but because of the divorce, I think that he was so focused on just, you know, making sure no one else is happy. And I know that sounds juvenile, but I think he was so focused on making everybody else miserable because he was living, you know, a very lonely, miserable kind of existence. And I think that, you know, he just started, you know, just really distancing himself from, in some aspects, reality. I wonder oftentimes if he even knows what reality is anymore. And it really disturbs me to see how far down he's gotten, especially, you know, really witnessing it since Dylan's been missing. Just so detached, you know, in denial about everything, you know, just not taking any responsibility, blaming everybody else for everything that's happening, and not really, you know, very you know, cannot look at himself. I can't think of the word I'm trying to say.
So it's just, he's almost robotic in his, is what you're saying, is the picture I'm getting. Almost robotic and just so detached, like an unplugged robot, just kind of no emotion whatsoever. And he wasn't like this before. He wasn't this great attentive father, but he certainly wasn't as detached as he is now. And he's focusing on him. That's what I've noticed. I think everybody else has noticed. He's focusing a lot on him and what's being done to him and how this is affecting him and him and him and him. And I don't hear Dylan's name anywhere in this.
Very disturbing.
Very disturbing. That's beyond disturbing. To me, that's a clue. To me, that's somebody that is acting like almost like a six-year-old. You know, I don't care what's happening around me. What about me, 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 me? Does Mark, you know, maybe you don't know this, does he have a lot of friends? Does he hang out? I mean, does he have a social life that you know of? Or is he just kind of locked away?
Well, you know, I don't really know about his social life much, but I do know that since Dylan's went missing, you know, he's spent many weeks on end just sitting, you know, in his cabin up in Vallecito and just not been very active or engaged at all through this whole process.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And was Dylan, it was a forced, I don't want to say forced, but it was a court-ordered visitation. Why court-ordered? You just couldn't work it out? Dylan didn't want to go? What was the situation there?
Well, I mean, you know, the judge basically split the holidays. And so I was to get Dylan for Christmas, and Mark was
I
to
see.
Get...
Okay. Understood. Also, Mark appears to be a heavy drinker. I mean, he admitted that he drank, and he made it sound like it was nothing, a half a fifth of Jim Beam. If I drank a half a fifth of Jim Beam, I'd be flying. I wouldn't know who the hell I was, let alone take a polygraph test. Had he always been a heavy drinker?
Not to the extent that I'm seeing lately, no. I can tell it in his face. I can tell it in his demeanor. I don't recall him being, you know, ever that heavy.
Did he start the heavy drinking before Dylan visited him or after Dylan went missing?
Well, I never really knew what he was doing before Dylan went missing. I never, it's not like Mark and I ever really spoke often, and when we did, it was via email or through our attorneys, really, because he never would speak with me directly unless it was to criticize how I was parenting. But he, you know, I don't, Dylan never said that, you know, his dad was drunk all the time or anything, made mention of that or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he would have, obviously I would have.
Yes, he would have. Exactly. A lot of people are now asking in the chat room about the pictures. I don't know the time frame. When you found out about the pictures, was it in time to tell the judge during the custody hearing or not? Or did you not bring it up? What was the situation there?
I didn't bring it up. You know, it was very, very difficult for my children.
I know, honey. I know.
I just didn't think it was, and maybe in retrospect I should have, but...
Nobody's criticizing you. Nobody. Let me tell you, Elaine, nobody is criticizing you. We're just trying to get a timeline here, and I know it's very difficult, and it's shocking, and it's horrible. It's just horrible. Because that, to me, those pictures, and I'm not a doctor, but they show a mind deteriorating fast.
Exactly.
And that's what's scary. That's what's very scary.
Yes.
Do you have, and maybe this is too painful of a place to go, and we don't have to go here, but do you have any theories on where Dylan is or what happened that night?
Oh, you know, I think just like everybody, I mean, you know, I don't know that I have theories. I know that all the things that Mark is saying that Dylan did are very uncharacteristic to Dylan. I even question whether he made it back to his dad's house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I just, you know, I have to have faith in my heart that Mark hasn't deteriorated so bad that he would hurt his own son. I mean, he's hurting him by keeping him away from his family, all of us. But I just have to believe in my heart and hope that Dylan is just being kept away. And I have to hope that Mark didn't, you know, hurt him.
I understand. No, yes. Let's just hope and pray that Mark is doing this just to be mean and evil to you and to keep him away from you because he's alive somewhere, and that's what we want. And, you know, Elaine, after Elizabeth Smart, anything's possible. Anything is possible.
Paul, Hornbeck, you know, all kinds of kids make their way home. And, you know, that's what we have to have for Dylan. We have to have hope.
Absolutely. Do you think it's possible that Mark, and there's nothing you can do because he's not talking to you, but maybe he's got a brain disorder, a tumor, a brain disease. You know, it just sounds like there's something really disturbing going on. Is that a possibility?
Anything's a possibility. You know,
yeah.
I don't rule anything out anymore.
How many kids does Mark have? How many does he have?
Mark has four boys.
Four boys, and two of them are yours. You had two children together, right?
Yes.
And then the one boy that was on the show, I apologize, I forget his name.
Brandon.
Yeah, he's the one who said he would be standing on the top of a mountain shouting out his son's name, and he can't figure out why Mark isn't doing that. Now, what about his other son? Do you know anything about him?
Yes, I mean, you know, I was their stepmom for many years, and
mm-hmm.
they both live in Arizona, and I speak with Brandon more often, but I do have contact with both of those boys.
Elaine, what can we do to help you personally? What do you need? Tell us. We're here. What's the first thing that you thought of when I said that? Tell us what that is, and we'll see if we can help you.
Well, you know, everybody keep your eyes wide open. And, you know, if somebody is hiding Dylan, it's time to come forward. You know, all we want is Dylan home. That's always been our main priority. I'm not trying to be mean or I'm not a bitter ex-wife. I just want Dylan to come home. And I really believe that Mark knows more than he's saying. So, you know, the prayers, the posts, you know, just the constant reiteration of Dylan being missing is very helpful. And, you know, the support that we're getting from perfect strangers is greatly appreciated. Just keep Dylan in your thoughts and prayers and keep your eyes open because, you know, anybody who knows or saw just any little thing could be a big, big clue in this case. So please
that, absolutely.
Forward.
And that's just it. People may think they don't know something. They may think, oh, that's not important, but it is. And so they need to come forward. I do have one more question, and I don't know if you can answer this or not. When Dylan would visit his father, would he be gone for hours at a time visiting his friends and show up back at the house late at night? Was that common, do you know?
No, because Dylan's friends live in Bayfield, so Mark
mm-hmm.
would actually have to bring Dylan
okay.
to Bayfield, you know, and that's there's no way he could walk. Even to walk to his friend's house that lived up in Vallecito is a 6-mile walk.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And Dylan did not, he was not a big walker. He, you know, he had a phone, so he would call and text people. He would have made sure that he was up at 6:30 in the morning to get down to Bayfield that morning. I know that for a fact.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Elaine, you have my number now. I want you to call me anytime, day or night. I'm open 24/7, just like 7-Eleven, whatever you need, call me. And know that you have a large group of tens of thousands of people from all over the world that would jump at the chance to help you. So if there's something you need, please do not hesitate to call us. If you, I don't care what it is. You know, you need someone to pick up your laundry. You need someone to mow your lawn. Let us know. We'll do our best to help you any way we can, because that's what we do. Okay, Elaine? And everybody, I know I speak for everybody in the chat room. We are, our hearts are breaking with you, Elaine, and we're praying and hoping for this to have a happy homecoming for Dylan and you, and we're just going to keep positive thoughts. Is there anything else that that you would like to go over, or anything else you would like to add, Elaine?
I just want to say thank you to everybody. I mean, like I said, you know, people I've never met are working so hard on getting Dylan's face out there and Dylan's story out there, and you know, we're across the country and in several other countries, and you know, I so appreciate everybody. You know, we just got to keep Dylan's story out there so that hopefully something will come of it. And I really appreciate everybody's support.
And Elaine, anytime you want to come on the show, you have an open invitation. I will be calling you and checking in with you every so often. But if there's something going on and you want to talk about it, you call me. Well, you're right up first, okay?
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay,
that.
Elaine, you take care, and God bless you. We are with you, and we're just going to keep praying and hoping. Take care, Elaine, okay?
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I just need to sit here for a minute, guys. Oh, my God. I don't think I've ever felt so much human pain as was radiating from Elaine tonight. I can't imagine the hell this woman is going through. You know, to look back now and say, were these signs? Should I have done this? Should I have done that? I'm sure she is just beating herself up all over the place, and she shouldn't. And I hope to God nobody gets on WebSleuth or any other forum and starts bitching and moaning that she didn't show those pictures to the judge. They're very painful. It was horrible. And you know what? I understand. I don't know if I would have either. I don't think she ever thought Mark was going to do anything horrible to her children, or she would have, you know. But you just never know. That's the problem. You never know. And he apparently, Mark, has gone downhill fast. And the fact that he's drinking before a polygraph test on the Dr. Phil show. And I was very interested in Elaine's answer as to why he would go on the Dr. Phil show if he's not talking to anybody. I mean, Dr. Phil is going to nail him to the wall. And Elaine said he was under a lot of pressure. If he hadn't gone on the Dr. Phil show, it would have been worse. And I believe it would have been worse, because then he absolutely, nobody would have believed anything he said. However, I do want to stress again, people, if you are a member of WebSleuth, and somebody wants to get on there and defend Mark Redwine, you respect that opinion, please. Don't complain. Don't alert. Don't write back something snarky. You let them tell their opinion. That's what WebSleuth does. We tell both sides of the story. Okay? Kids, we have that clear? I feel like I'm standing up here with a ruler and I just need to smack some heads. Kim,
yeah, sure. I've got a ray gun. You know, I wanted to add, too, you wouldn't mind having Mark on the show, right, Tricia?
Oh, I'd love to have Mark on the show. Absolutely. In fact, my goal is to contact him this week. I would welcome him on the show. I'd give him the whole hour. He could say whatever he wanted. Absolutely. And he would be treated with respect and graciously, just like I do all of my guests. So I'm going to try desperately to get a hold of Mark and ask him to come on the show.
Great.
Absolutely.
Great. Yeah,
Kim,
I hope he does.
I do too. I really do. And maybe he might even come on with Elaine. That would be fabulous. Then they could talk. Maybe just talk. I mean, Oh, my God, there's just so many what-ifs, and I just wish he would talk. Okay, Kimster, we have it. It is time for the Web Sleuth's Hot Cold Case of the Week. And what is that, my darling friend?
Well, you know, I'm going to throw something at you you weren't expecting when I send you my copy for the show. Mm-hmm. Something else has come up. It just came up, I think, like around 3 o'clock my time on the Pacific. They have found some human remains in Scurry County, Texas. I don't know if you remember, but I think that's the area where Billy Dunn's boyfriend lived.
Oh my God, no.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the big one, the big bombshell for our for websleuth.com today.
Haley Dunn. Do they know?
We don't know that it's her. They said that it could take weeks. I'm hoping that it won't take weeks because they can do dentals, you know. But of course,
right.
Immediately I contacted Carl Kay. He's our unidentified remains moderator to see if he could look around for other people that are missing in the area. If anybody knows about any unidentified or unidentified people that are missing, is him.
Right.
So, you know, I let him know about it, too. But, it's so hot off the press that we don't know much about it yet. We know, you know, they haven't said – they can tell if the remains are male or female pretty quickly. So we should be getting some more of that kind of news.
Let's just refresh everybody's memory very quickly here. Haley Dunn went missing. The boyfriend, it was just one of those horrible situations where the mother, Billy, defended the boyfriend no matter what. And people were suspecting the boyfriend because of the way he was acting. We had Billy on the show, and she just still defended him. And there is a suspicion out there that he was doing something. And apparently there are some issues with the story he told about the day that Haley went missing, and now we hear there are human remains found close to where Billy Dunn's boyfriend lived. Oh, boy, it just never ends. I'm so sick of reporting about people dying. I want to report people coming home alive and happy, and maybe we'll have that in our cold case. Let's hope so. Okay, Kim, sir.
Before you go crazy, because I know before I go into this cold case, I think we need a little reprieve, okay? This has been a very heavy-duty show. And I just want to ask you if you're wearing any green.
Oh, my gosh, I'm not.
Okay, everybody, pinch Trisha right now. Everybody pinch her. Because today's St. Patrick's Day. I told you last week it was going to be St. Patrick's
Day. Right.
You
believe me, there's plenty of fat to grab onto. If you live in Texas, you can grab to my thigh probably right now. So,
Trisha,
yes, it is St. Patrick's Day.
And also, by the way, speaking of celebrating, remember when I told you last December that Dark Knight wasn't going to be doing birthday threads anymore in the jury room, the private area? Well, our own beloved Web Sleuth retired moderator, Cubby, she took the baton on that. So we still are having our threads every day for our Web Sleuth members. We have a birthday party. So be sure to go in the private forum of Web Sleuth, and you'll see the birthday parties going on. And I just really appreciate Cubby doing that for us.
Yes, Cubby, thank you. Shout out to Cubby for doing that. That is time-consuming and very welcomed and very appreciated. Thank you, Cubby. Oh, okay, that felt good to kind of lighten it up a bit. Thank you, Kim, sir.
Oh, no problem. But now it's time to get back to some serious business, okay?
Yes. Okay, we're ready.
All right. Okay. Do-do-do-do-do-do!
Serious business with a horn. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, Trisha, when I first heard about Dylan Redwine's case, and this is in the early days, my view was that he and his dad had gotten into a fight and that Dylan took off and got lost in the rugged terrain out there. I still haven't let go of that line of thinking completely, but what's interesting tonight is that our cold case is about a little boy who got lost. And I didn't pick this cold case for that reason either. This cold case was actually a request from our super moderator, I'm Amazed, mm-hmm. but it kind of reminded me of Dylan a little bit when I was looking into the case. This case is about Randy Parscale. And Randy Parscale was last seen hiking with his family in Pepper Sauce Canyon in the Santa Catalina Mountains near Oracle, Arizona on April 7th, 1979. He wandered ahead of the rest of the group, and he's never been seen again. An extensive search of the canyon area there didn't produce any evidence as to his whereabouts. And Tricia, I don't showcase people who went missing in the wilderness as a rule, but the mystery as to what happened to Randy doesn't end here. Mm-hmm. In 1985, a woman reported that she had found a dollar bill with the phrase written on it, "I'm alive in Phoenix, Arizona, help me, Randy Parscale," written on it.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, and that's not the end yet either. Police investigation of this lead turned up no evidence, but in 1989, Randy's family found out that a man using Randy's Social Security number was working at a construction site in Phoenix. His father went to Phoenix to investigate, and he found out that the individual that was working there also fit Randy's physical description. He was no longer employed there by the time he got there, though.
Mm-hmm.
And the construction worker was never located, and his identity has not been confirmed.
Oh, my
gosh.
That's why I thought
this was a good one to put up there, because speaking of, you want to bring somebody home alive, if our can help us bring this man home alive so his family knows what happened to him.
Absolutely. Oh, that is just, that's very odd. Oh, let's hope that Social Security number is really his. That would be wonderful. Wow. Let's hope that could be a very happy ending, Kimster. It really could be.
It really could. So if you think Randy Parscale is alive somewhere, or are curious that he might be alive somewhere, go to the front page of Web Sleuths at www.websleuths.com and go up to the upper right-hand corner, and there's a picture of Randy when he was a little boy, when he first went missing, and there's also a picture of what they think Randy might look like today. That'll really help you. And also when you get up there, you'll see a link to Randy's thread. Click there on that link and get there, go over to his thread so you can dig up some clues with our other members. But you can only post there if you're a member of Web Sleuth. So please join today because we'd love to have you. And Tricia, can you let us know how much it costs to join websleuths.com these days?
Yes, the fee is absolutely nothing. Oh, my flippin' heck, it's absolutely free. All we need is an email address, my friends, and don't believe the rumors. We don't need the blood of your firstborn. We don't need any corneas. We don't need any private information, just an email address so we can communicate with you if we need to, and that is it. We would love you to join Web Sleuths. As you've heard tonight, it's a very active community, and I love hearing stories about Web Sleuths members coming together and meeting each other. And I'd like to personally thank the Web Sleuths member who put that package together for Travis Alexander's family and said it was from all of us at Web Sleuths. I thought that was a very unselfish thing to do and very kind. So, Kimster, thank you once again for all your hard work behind the scenes. Next week's show, it's going to be very interesting. We're going to have a DNA specialist on to talk a little bit about the JonBenet Ramsey case and other DNA questions. He's one of the best. And, of course, we'll have a Jody Arias update from Katie Cool Lady, and who knows what else will happen next week. It's Tricia's True Crime Radio, and remember, we're brought to you by Canines with a Cause. This is a nonprofit organization with the mission of helping shelter dogs find homes by training them to work as companion therapy and service dogs for veterans in need. Check out their website, Canines with a Cause. Remember this, please, my friends. Opinions expressed on Tricia's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. I take no responsibility for them. Tricia's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuths.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. So in other words, if you get your true crime panties in a wad about something that was said on Web Sleuths and Forums for Justice, just remember, it's not the radio show's deal. We're responsible for what is said on the radio show. The people who say it are the ones responsible. Got it? Good. I'm glad. Okay, it's Tricia's True Crime Radio, where we discuss current events and true crime, and we always do it with common sense. Thank you very much, and good night.